Hi, this is Nancy Clare. Welcome to Speaking of Mysteries. This episode, we're speaking to James R. Benn, whose Blue Madonna is the 11th and latest installment of his Billy Boyle World War II mysteries. Almost every crime fiction fan has a favorite series, and Billy Boyle is one of mine. What started out in the first book as a bit of a lark for Billy Boyle, one of Boston PD's youngest detectives, as a junior officer working with his distant cousin, Uncle Ike, as in General Eisenhower, has evolved into so much more as Billy's eyes are open to man's inhumanity to man. But in spite of, or more likely because of, the war, the work into investigating crimes that have the potential to interfere with the war effort must go on. That's Billy's job, and he does it well to our entertainment benefit. Here's James R. Benn. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and our guest for episode 97 is James R. Benn, whose Blue Madonna, a Billy Boyle World War II mystery, has just been released. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Nancy.
I wanted to actually start with a quote that really struck me. It's towards the end of the book, but not really a spoiler. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read it and then ask you a question about it. "Are you all right, Billy?" Juliet asked as we grouped around the German vehicle, loading it with corpses. I didn't know if she was talking about the fight or the execution. "I'm fine," I said, and I was. Could I have been so cold-blooded 2 years ago when I first left the States? Would I have thought only a callous murderer could be capable of killing a prisoner? Probably. So I think that is a great look at the arc of Billy's character since we met him in the first book.
Yes.
And so I wanted to ask you about Billy's evolution over the course of these 11 books. Ask you what your, you know, what has the arc been deliberate, or has it been a bit of a surprise to you?
Well, it was a surprise after the first book, because I thought I had this great kind of a stereotypical American brash, kind of slightly shallow young fellow who's going to be a lot of fun to write, and he is. But when I started the second book, it was actually the weekend after 9/11, and I put off starting it because of everything that had happened, but I can just really vividly remember walking outside, looking up at the sky, the empty sky, and realizing that this was history happening. And it was just like it happened to guys like Billy. And I couldn't just make him that same unchanging wise guy. It had to get deeper and darker, and all this had to have an effect on him, because at that very moment, what had happened on 9/11 had had a tremendous effect on me, as it did on so many people. So from that moment forward, I knew it was going to be that he would have to pay a price for everything he saw and endured for the series to have any self-respect. I'm so glad you picked up on that, because I thought that was an important moment in his development, to because he's already gone from feeling bad about doing things, and now he's feeling bad about not feeling bad, and it can't get any better either. That's the real honest truth of it.
Well, in the Blue Madonna, the Blue Madonna takes place in late May 1944, which is days before the Normandy invasion. And Billy is going to France, but he's not part of D-Day. So I thought that was an interesting perspective, to look at the anticipation of the invasion and then the initial invasion from the point of view of the French who lived inland. And they knew it was happening, but it's success or failure in your book. It's just started. The success or failure isn't determined. You know, nobody knows.
And all they could do was shift their resistance fighting. So I wanted to ask you, that's just an interesting perspective, and how you don't want to introduce any spoilers to the story, but why you chose to go that direction in France, yeah. Sort of from the mm-hmm. inland to the coast.
Right. Well, you know, actually for several years now, I've been seeing D-Day coming and struggling with how to introduce Billy into that story because it's so big. And it wouldn't make any sense for him to simply be in the, you know, in the boats attacking the beaches. That's not his role. So I had to find a way into the story so I could represent D-Day, but also have it be something that made sense given his responsibilities. So having this criminal investigation that has to take place in occupied France gave me a way into the story of D-Day. So, you know, all he sees of it is as they're flying over, he sees the invasion fleet. But then after that, as you say, he's in the interior, and they're really fighting to make sure the invasion succeeds. But it was the only way I could see to do it where the story of D-Day itself wouldn't overwhelm the story of what Billy was up to.
It's kind of like a distant thunder, which I know I'm borrowing from Barbara Tuchman.
Right, right, yeah.
But that's what occurred, that's what I thought as I read it. I thought, what an interesting mm-hmm. perspective. Communications are so chaotic at that point, and yeah. one of the elements of the story is they really are cut off, yeah. even by their wireless, from mm-hmm. any sort of central communications in England. And all it's rumor and innuendo. You touched on this in your previous answer, that your series, which is now 11 books with mm-hmm. Blue Madonna, it shows us the war from a completely different perspective. You know, Billy is a soldier, but he's not fighting the battles in the front lines. But the stakes right. of the war that Billy finds himself in have enormous consequences as well. And I thought it'd be nice to hear you talk about why you chose this perspective, Billy as a criminal investigator. Because honestly, you know, I'm sure this has brought up before, war is like one big crime.
Right, right. And that's actually what attracted me to that idea, is the contrast between investigating a murder in the midst of sanctioned murder. And I thought that at the very beginning, I thought there would just be some interesting conflicts within Billy's own world to that. As Winston Churchill famously said, you know, truth in wartime, truth is so precious. She must be protected by a bodyguard of lies. So oftentimes he finds himself up against that bodyguard of lies to come against the truth. And finding stories like that are not very well known, it's just thrilling to me to be able to use that the concept of Billy and his investigations to illuminate some of those things.
It's not unknown for Billy to make deals with the devil. And I think one mm-hmm. of the more interesting aspects, and this is not the first story that has touched on the exploration of the relationship between criminals and the World War II mm-hmm. effort. And it was a complicated equation because it wasn't black and white. So, you know, some criminals were also patriots.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was wondering if that was, everyone's heard the Lucky Luciano story.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis mm-hmm. Sicily. But I was wondering if there was a parallel, which you wrote about, but I wonder if there's a parallel with the gangs in England and the black market.
Well, I didn't find much of that in the research, and I think part of the reason is the black market trade was so lucrative that no criminal could keep their hands under the till, and it was the confluence of organized crime in Great Britain and the Americans coming, not only with their vast mountains of supplies and bringing them into a country that had been under such strict rationing. But also, within the tens of thousands of troops that came, some of those Americans were just naturally criminals themselves and pretty quickly allied themselves with the English gangs. So it seemed to me right away that, you know, that certainly was the greatest generation of heroes, but it was also the greatest generation of thieves for some of them, because there was just so much money to be made. One thing I remember looking up was that a can of coffee in today's dollars was worth $135 on the black market. And, of course, the army dealt in tens of thousands of cans of coffee. So there were riches to be made.
As you mentioned, this was a big thing, and I would guess that there was a certain tolerance of pilfering, which makes it sound like such a minor thing, until it began to impact the idea that there might not be enough supplies, food, right, blankets, you name it, shoes.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's always a kind of that acceptable level. I was at a book talk the other night, and a fellow told me that his dad was in the war in the Pacific and got arrested for stealing the officer's liquor and then selling it to the enlisted men. Now, that was kind of like half Robin Hood and half thievery. But, you know, that was very small scale, and I think that kind of thing probably went on a lot. But we are here, we're talking wholesale criminal activity. There was a railway battalion in France after the invasion that had taken place that was nicknamed the Millionaires Battalion, because they made so much money, and they would just stop the trains at night, let the French criminals offload supplies, and then take off again. So it was pretty heavy duty.
And that's one set of crime and criminals that features in the Blue Madonna. But Billy comes across another crimes, which is sort of the second serious issue that comes up in this book. And he is investigating the theft of paintings, the theft of art, which is where the book gets its name, The Blue Madonna. The actual painting that you're referencing wasn't one of the priceless artworks that was stolen, but countless others were, and this is something that the repercussions of these thefts continue to be felt to this day, 70 years after the war ended.
Right.
So was that always part of the intention to have the parallel stories of these two criminal activities on top of the war?
I had wanted to write about the Nazis looting artwork for a long time, and then after the Monuments Men thing came out, I thought, well, that story's already been told. So this is told from a slightly different perspective about some paintings that had been hidden, and the Nazis are still after them, trying to find out where they are. So which actually did occur. After the Germans invaded France, a lot of collections were sent out of Paris to the countryside to be hidden safely. But the Germans found most of those, but there were still some that were hidden for the whole course of the war. And I thought that was an interesting take on the looted art issue, is that kind of cat and mouse game between the Germans looking for the artwork and the people who were hiding it. And I did select a painting that was not actually in Europe at all during the war, just because I needed to fictionalize it, and I did not want to trivialize the art theft of somebody's personal property that really was stolen. So when I saw the actual painting, the Blue Madonna, I was so struck by it, I said, that has to be the one in the story.
It also integrates the idea of faith and why wars are fought. You mentioned that, of course, you know, the Jews of France had been taken away, their art had been stolen, the complicity of some of the French people. But it's interesting that the character that is the character in this story, the French count, is is descended from Huguenot, and it just shows that the idea of wars between different faiths is nothing new.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've always been fascinated by the a lot of movies about England in the Middle Ages. You saw all those priest holes where they used to hide the priests out from the Protestants. And when I found out, when I read about the Huguenots and how they had much the same thing, just reversed the religions in France, I thought that's just fascinating. And doing that research, I stumbled upon the story of the chateau, which there really was a chateau built upon Druid ruins. So it was just hard to stay away from that. That was such a fascinating notion.
Which makes this, as I said, I have found this the most multi-layered story that you've told. There's, you know, all of the characters are evolving. And, you know, we should mention that most of your characters that we've met in previous books show up. I'm not going to say who. And they are all on this journey. That's how I felt. This really was a bit of like a road trip, kind of a very grim road trip that was both literal and metaphorical for all of them. To the point of that quote, the things that they had to do to survive and the things that they had to do to prevail, because those were two different things. Except for Billy's special assignment in the Pacific, in the White Ghost, his war has been in Europe and North Africa. And I think it's fascinating, and I've seen this through your books, it's fascinating how the war was very different in different locations. You know, it was sort of a dreadful experience for everyone, but dreadful in different ways if you were in England, Sicily, Italy, or France. And so is that part of what you're doing here with this series?
Yes. It's also dictated somewhat by his association with Eisenhower. So except for that sojourn in the South Pacific, he does have to follow the course of the war. So it's really a kind of an exercise in geography and coming to grips with the different people, the different, it's very different what happened in Sicily than what happens in France, just because of the nature of the countryside, the people, and that's pretty interesting to explore. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that someday, you know, we'll make it into Germany and maybe have some post-war stuff going on. But
well, you actually anticipated my next question, which is at the end of the book, as we mentioned, the invasion of France is started by the Allied forces. There's no spoiler in that. So I'm wondering what's next on the horizon for Billy, Kaz, and Diana. Are they going to stay on the continent, are they going to be on the road to Berlin?
They do have a little side trip next time. And as I was doing research for this book into the French Resistance, I just came across a mention of a resistance network that was based on a Zionist youth movement. So it was a group of young Jews who were smuggling Jewish children across the Swiss border. And I had just never heard of that, and I kind of wondered, well, why did they have to smuggle them across? I know they'd have to smuggle them out of France. And as I looked into that, I learned a lot about the role of the Swiss in the war. They were not as neutral as they'd like us now to think they were. They were very pro-German, and they were very anti-Semitic. They wanted to keep Jews out of Switzerland, hence the smuggling in. That little footnote just took me down this rabbit hole of research. So in the next book, at the end, Billy and Kaz had somewhere else to go, and that somewhere else is Switzerland, and they have a role to play there. It has to do with gold and Jewish refugees, and I get to tell the story of how basically Switzerland was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Third Reich. But I don't can't say too much about that now. So
no, but
that's where we're going next, to the land of cuckoo clocks and chocolate.
It does pique our interest, and it does. You talk about the rabbit hole of research, and I think that's one of the beauties of, first of all, that you're doing a series that involves one character, that you can come across these stories, footnotes, you call them, and it's like serendipity. It's like, well, here's a story.
Right, right.
And Billy can be part of
it. It's amazing. When I began this, I thought I knew a lot about the Second World War. And as I'm discovering now, I had a very surface knowledge, and it's just fascinating to find out all these
wonderful like you call them side trips, you know, like the White Ghost, which we spoke I think we spoke after the book Before the White Ghost, and you told me about the White Ghost, and I thought, well, how the heck how the heck is he going to do that? And then I read it, and I thought to myself, well, this was an interesting look at the Kennedy family, and one that's been hinted at, you know, their meddling and their sort of ambiguous nature, both as politicians and as people. You know, they tend to be saints now, you know, but they weren't then.
And I have to tell you, I had a funny experience right after I finished writing that. And I tend to get all worked up about these topics. So I was all worked up about the Kennedys and all the things I learned about them that were not very favorable. And I just happened to attend a hearing here. I live in Connecticut, and there were cuts to library budgets. So as a former librarian, I went to testify at the state capitol at a hearing about the budget cuts. And who walks in the room but Ted Kennedy Jr., who's a state senator here in Connecticut. And he had that Kennedy charisma that people talked about. I had never met any of the Kennedys. But when he just walked in the room, he filled it entirely. And he spoke off the cuff very eloquently. And sitting there listening to him, I got it, how the Kennedys just drew all these people in, because he just had that charm and total sincerity. And I just, if he asked for volunteers, I would have raised my hand. So it was pretty instructive, really, to have that experience.
You're 11 books published now. You've just mentioned the thought about your 12th book, which I'm sure is probably done or very close to
it. It's been submitted to the publisher, yes.
Do you see sort of an end to Billy's series and Billy's story? I mean, it's 1944, and World War II really wasn't over until about 1955. I mean, the fighting stopped.
Right. You know, a lot of people ask, you know, is it going to go to Korea? Is it going to do this or that or come home? And I really see it ending with the war. I could see a post-war story in Berlin and with the Russians, but I think it'll be done when the war is done. But there's a lot of stories to tell this, you know. A year's worth of war left, just about, in Europe. So a lot can happen. And I don't think it's going to continue on and on and on. There's plenty of other things to write about.
Oh, well, there you go. That was my next and usually my last question. There's the tyranny of the series. People talk about it's a blessing and a curse, some writers say.
Yeah.
In your case, you seem to really like your characters. But writers always want to write about other stuff. So what are some of your ideas?
Well, actually, you know, when you do a book a year, that's not a lot of time. But I did happen to finish the next book a little early. So right now I'm working on a young adult novel. And I have always been fascinated by the story of Benedict Arnold here in Connecticut, who was born and raised just right up the road from me. So I'm writing a young adult book about the illegitimate son of Benedict Arnold, who is a slave and who learns as he's attending his mother's deathbed, she reveals to him that his father is Benedict Arnold, that she was a slave in his household, and instructs him to go find his father. And this is during the Revolutionary War, right after Benedict Arnold has gone over to the British. This young fellow takes her, makes a promise to her. And as it turns out, not too far down the road in New London, Connecticut, Benedict Arnold came with the British and burned the town. So in my imagination, this young slave who knows that's his father tries to make contact with him, but the burning of New London gets in the way. So it's a lot of fun going way back in time and writing in the voice for a young adult audience. So it's kind of a refreshing break from the Billy Boyle stories.
Well, I actually love YA fiction. I do. And I understand. Actually, I don't understand why it's differentiated, but that's a whole other conversation about genre.
Yeah, right.
Thanks again, Jim, for your time and for telling us about this latest installment of Billy Boyle. Do you have a title for the next installment so we can put it on our wish lists?
Yes, the title is The Devouring. And The Devouring is what the gypsies, that was their name for their Holocaust. There's a gypsy involved as well.
Well, I can't wait. And I once again, thank you so much for your time and for talking to us and telling us about your foray into YA, and we'll look forward to that. And about keeping us up to date with Billy.
Hey, thank you, Nancy. It was a lot of fun.